Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podco.co at podgo.co. Now let's kick off the show. John and James, let's get at it. This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. Welcome to season three, episode number 47. Oh my God, we're getting way up there. Of the Outlap F1 podcast. This is our COTA experience recap episode because we all went and we all had some different experiences we wanted to share. And there was a really, really meaningful survey too that we're going to get into in the second half of the show. So we're going to dive into that. It was sponsored by F1 and had some really interesting results for that. So we're going to dive into that. You've got Andy. I'm along with John and Deanna. It's a Monday night. We're normally not recording on a Monday, but we figured we would try this out. How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, we. I think everybody had some Halloween stuff last night. It was getting late, so we pushed it to tonight. But yeah, we usually don't record after a long day of work. Well, I take that back. We usually record on Wednesdays, and we'll probably record on Wednesday this week as well. We have a race week, but yeah, doing well. I'm glad to be talking F1. It feels like it's been a while, even though it's only been like a week. So,
yep. Yesterday I got trapped in a parade. That was an adventure. So, yeah, happy that one's over with. But sorry, couldn't make it to Sunday.
It's like something out of a movie, Deanna.
It felt like it.
You should have pulled out your GoPro.
If I would have had it.
You started a new channel, Things That Happen in New York City. Reactions Live.
On Halloween night, no less.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
An adventure.
Yeah, I've been in Vegas for Halloween. That was an adventure, to say the least. I'm sure New York is, I'm sure it held its own pretty well, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, you can find our show on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email our show if you have any questions about anything at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can find our beautiful website designed by Chris, who was with us out in at COTA about a week ago, at www.outlapf1.com. If this is all brand new to you and you don't even know what F1 is, but you want to find out, please do check out our F1 for Beginners Season 3, Episode 6. It's soup to nuts, everything you would need to plug in and get read up on the sport of Formula One, what we love to talk about. You can also find our Sabre Cook interviews. Her season did come to an end at Circuit of the Americas, but we had two really, really good conversations with her before the season started. It's Season 2, Episode 2, and Season 3, Episode 21, all about the W Series and Sabre. Check out Relap with Deanna, her USGP reaction featuring John as the air quote stopwatch guy is up. She also was recently on the NASCAR weekly podcast. On both of those you can find on YouTube. Please do check those out. They are very good. Deanna did one heck of a job on both of them.
Apologies to all your Relap viewers for being so prevalent in your video.
Oh no, it's okay. Because like I was just sitting there staring at the cars and I wasn't saying anything. So like the only times I was actually like remembering I needed to film something was when we were like having discussions. I was like, oh yeah. So thank you, really.
Yeah, I got stuck with this old guy with his phone and his watch trying to get timing with a stopwatch app and old school. Yeah.
That's but it worked. It did actually work and we had no better option. So that was a great idea.
I was surprised with myself of how accurate I saw like you'd highlight the actual time, and I'm like,
there was a little
usually.
There was a little
couple ones where I
editing magic in there, that, but you were close. You were close.
Not too bad, considering I was
post production
two different screens simultaneously. Yeah,
yeah.
Both of which that had no signal, but we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
Just as a reminder, if you would like to join the Outlap F1 Nation, and we did get a chance to meet a few of the Outlap F1 Nation during our recent trip down to Austin, please feel free to sign up. We do want that sign in Zandvoort. We want Fernando Alonso running over it with all of your names on it. So if you'd like to support the show, please do check out our link in our show notes. You can find our anchor page, whatever you'd like to give. As you probably heard, we've tried to make some enhancements to the show over the course of the year, and we would love to continue to do that. But it does cost money with which to do that. So anything you guys want to spare or gals out there want to spare, we would be super appreciative. It's so humbling when we get a new one. We do love to see it. And thank you all so much to those who've already done it. So please do check out our link in the show notes. And finally, we are continuing to partner with the good folks at Manscaped. Please do take advantage of our 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP. Hey, the holidays are coming. You might want to get your orders in now. Everybody's got supply chain issues, so please do take advantage of that while you can. The nice thing is they don't seem to have been affected by anything, so that's really good. So now that we've gotten all that out of the way, now that we're all back from our COTA adventure, and for some of us it was more of an adventure than others, my takeaway is it was that whole weekend was basically make your own dang rules. John and Deanna, what were your initial thoughts on the COTA weekend?
So many people. Just, I couldn't wrap my head around how many people were there, and we'll probably talk about it more in a second here, but just, yeah, you could not go anywhere or do anything without being completely surrounded by thousands of people. So it was an adventure.
Yeah, the same for me. I mean, the only event that I've ever been to in my entire life that was bigger than this was the 100th running of the Indy 500, which I think had on race day, like anywhere from 300,000 to 400,000 people there. And that was insanity, like shoulder to shoulder, couldn't move. Talk about a track not equipped for that big of a crowd. You can add Indy to that list for sure. But yeah, it was, you know, Andy, we're old timers. We talk about in the car, you know, on the many hours trying to get out of the track. It's what we always dreamed of, you know, to have an event like this in America. So we got what we wanted.
Oh, no, definitely growing pains. I mean, I knew we were, at least from a crowd management standpoint, I knew we were in trouble right when we got onto that farm road that takes you to the track on Friday. And it was three lanes full and it wasn't moving. And I went, it's Friday. This is the day you're supposed to be able to get in and out and wander around and take pictures. And no, none of that. You basically were relegated to wherever you could be. But yeah, I mean, what a crowd. And here's the other kicker was it's for so many years, it was so foreign of a crowd. You know, people would come over from Europe and other places to watch, you know, basically their sport, but their sport here. This was all an American crowd, which made it even that much more stunning, I think.
Yeah. At least, I mean, to have the North American presence there. I think I agree with you. 2019, you strolled right in. There was not much going on. I mean, we had a stellar crowd in 2019, but yeah, Friday and most of the day, Saturday, you could go in and out wherever you wanted. You could get in. I mean, going out was a little bit of a challenge, but I mean, getting in on that Friday, you just pulled right in, found a parking spot, got out, and, you know, walked to the track. No big deal. So yeah, it was. I know, Deanna, you were talking about your shuttle that took the 20-minute ride that took how long on Friday?
Yeah. So Friday, I left my friend's apartment like an hour and a half before, and I was like, okay, this is plenty of time because it should be about 20-25 minutes away. And it took me over an hour, so I missed the very first 20 minutes of free practice one and just, like, ran to the closest GA spot I could possibly find. And, like, the crowd at FP1 was what I had imagined in my mind for race day.
Yeah.
So just to start at that point, it was like, oh, okay, this is a big thing, a big deal. There are a lot of people here. And, yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So what did we think, not only with just that number of people, but what did we think actually kind of did COTA did well? Because I know we're going to get into what they did wrong. But what did they do well before we actually start peeling back the onion a little bit here?
Selling the event out. They did a great job at that. I mean, I think somebody brought up the point, and this is it. Probably part of it is that a lot of the tickets were rollovers from 2020. So you already had all these people that bought tickets last year. and then on top of everybody that wants to come this year. And so I kind of talked about in my video from yesterday how we've gotten so many new fans from Drive to Survive, being home at COVID, kind of a perfect storm, and all these people coming in and then getting to this really great title battle. So we had all that demand on top of all these people that already had tickets from last year. So I think that culminated in just being this huge, massive amount of people, which was good on them.
Yeah, I think I read, and don't quote me on this number, I'm just going off memory, but I think they added something like 34,000 actual seats, and then obviously another slew of GA. Someone asked me, you know, could we sell more tickets? And based on what we were sitting, I would say no, but going back and watching the broadcast, I think if you go down by like 8, 9, 10, down yeah, the bottom was... hill, you still plenty of room over there. I don't know if you really want to because the facilities and stuff were much lighter in that section from walking that way. There was much less restrooms, not many food options and cocktail bars and things like that over that way, but you definitely could. Well,
the bigger issue with those areas, so on Sunday, I like walked down that way because I just needed to not sit down for a minute because we've been there all day. But the problem is it was like completely open and I think in between 8 and 9. You can't really see much, but the problem is they don't have a screen. I think if they put a couple more screens in, that they could probably justify selling more GA tickets and jamming even more people in there if they truly wanted to. But a lot of those empty spots were just completely not desirable spots because you couldn't. You would only kind of see the cars in between these two corners, and that was it, and you'd have no other context. So I think if they kind of upped the kind of amount of screens and facilities there, they could definitely pack more people in if they absolutely wanted to. I hope they don't, because it was the limit, maybe probably over the limit, but if they really, truly wanted to, they probably could.
Yeah.
So, in terms of what went right, I think it was the city of Austin did kind of what Austin has kind of become known for, and that's big events. I mean, they kind of got put on the map with, you know, South by Southwest. You know, Dell has moved down there. There's all this technology and all that other stuff that's now attracted to people down there. And Circuit of the Americas has actually slowly learned how to put on this event. They've integrated in the concerts, which I think is a big deal, because you not only get people who want to show up for the race, but then stay for an elite concert, which is something that not every Grand Prix necessarily can offer. So that's a really good thing. They do have different food options at certain parts of the track. It depends on where you are. If you're in, I think, around the stadium section, that's where the big food court is. So there's lots of different options there. And there's entertainment at all different points around the track, too, that they spread out. So it's not like you all have to be in one particular place to get something. So I think all of those are fairly good things. But I do think that I thought overall they were, I think, as surprised as we were of the fierce amount of numbers that they got early on. And I don't think they were, the city of Austin or the town of Elroy were necessarily prepared for all of those people descending at one particular time.
Well, I think the rest, not the track itself, and there's maybe some infrastructure issues that we can talk about in a second, but I think the actual city of Austin, because I was there visiting a friend too, so we went out to dinner and get drinks and all the stuff, and we were kind of out in the city, and I think the actual city of Austin did a great job. That's a great location to have a race. The city was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Most of the people were there for the race, but they all did a pretty good job in handling it. There's some lines here and there, but it wasn't too bad, and but they all had a great time. It was a great environment. They said it was like nothing like what they see for South by Southwest or any of the, or ACL or any of the other big festivals and things they have. They said this was a whole other level when we were talking about all of our waitresses and stuff. But I do think actual downtown Austin, the city itself did a good job. It was just kind of getting to and from the track was the issue.
Yeah. And I agree with you on like things they did right, Andy, as far as entertainment around the track. I mean, Chris and I did a couple of laps around the track. We had to reminisce on 2019 when we did, I don't know, I lost track of how many laps we did around the track that week. But, yeah, I mean, it's like every little section of corners, they had like a local band playing, little small stages, different like cultural centers, and they'd have music from around the world. During the stadium section, going in there, there's tons of different local food options. It's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
you know, to a little bit of an extreme. But, yeah, you had a ton of different options there. You know, going out into, like, where we were in the S's, you're pretty much stuck with, you know, the typical standard, you know, hot dogs type of food. Nothing really to write home about. But, yeah, I mean, and something that I think Coda has that we were talking online for people that were waiting, hoping they could get Miami tickets and didn't, and then they were thinking, okay, maybe general admission. Whereas Miami is built on a completely flat surface, so your viewing angles for a general admission seat is going to be next to nothing, especially if you're vertically challenged like someone like me, Indiana. then, yeah, like, in stark contrast to Coda, there's so much elevation changes that the landscape itself just, I mean, it's a GA's, it's a paradise if you want to be GA, minus, you know, probably being a little bit oversold this particular one. But from a viewing angle standpoint, you know, you can't beat it. I mean, even in the S's, we had, you know, the whole entire S's, you could see some of 15. I think there was another little section that you could see as well. So you've got that to your advantage that most tracks, I feel like, don't quite have to get into that level. So, you know, it was a well-built designed location.
A random spot that I liked where I was in FP1 was in between, I think it's 17, 18. But you're kind of sat at the bottom, and so you were looking up at to the top of the hill into turn one. So that's a separate suggestion. But there wasn't a TV screen there. That's my, they need to add a couple more, and they'll be all good.
Yeah, I mean, they did build the grandstand in my little secret, I used to call my little secret spot between 19 and 20, where if you would just walk around, and it wasn't that much of a walk, you just had to go around basically 20, and you could sit there, and you could see, I think, 7 different corners in any one shot. So, yeah, the viewing angles there are amazing. Mm-hmm. They're amazing because they actually trucked in mounds and mounds and mounds of dirt to create it, because it was basically, I mean, the land around it is all flat. I mean, they basically made that hill for this track. And that's, you know, because they wanted to provide that. And it's unique, I think, amongst a lot of F1 circuits. I don't know what other circuits, other than maybe Spa, where you would be able to see that much in certain places if you worked for it.
Probably Portimao. That's why I love a circuit with the elevation change, and this is just more reason to it. So you gotta love it.
It's a win-win for all parties. But I think you mentioned the screen, and that's probably the first thing if you want to transition to things that went wrong. I mean, there needs to be more screens. That's an understatement. It felt like to me, and I don't know if you noticed, Deanna, it felt like the commentating volume was decreased once the race started.
Yeah. I can provide some perspective on that, because if you were in the main grandstand where I was on Friday, it was bellowing so loud you could not hear anything other than their PA. And it would reverberate from the grandstand back, and you would hear it basically twice. And there were Coda ushers that I was talking to that were going to complain to their management about that exact issue. And then come Saturday, they turned it down a bit. And then it's where you gain, where you lose. Now, they probably should have upped the ante out where you guys were so that you could hear more and then decrease it where I was, because it wasn't necessarily needed. But there was definitely a new sound system, and I don't know how well they calibrated it throughout the course of the weekend.
Yeah, for us, we could hear the commentary if there were no cars, but everybody got pretty spaced out pretty quickly. So if you had one car going through there, you couldn't hear the commentary.
Yeah.
And like, that was kind of it. And then because it was so far away, they only had the driver names, and they also didn't have the coloring of the team.
Yeah.
So you were just trying to squint your eyes and see the three little letters, but it was very hard to see. And we could only see the top, I think, 6 spots on the timing tower.
Yeah.
So once you kind of got going, it was really hard to tell kind of what was going on behind about 6th place. And then I know I've had a lot of people comment on my videos and stuff saying there's like the AM frequencies and stuff that have it, but I'll look into that next time. But I didn't see any, I've seen it other races before where they've handed out the scanners and all that stuff, but I didn't see anything like that here.
They've had a couple of times with, it's a product called F1 Fan Vision, which if it's around is awesome. It's on its own cell phone tower. You're not tapping into any Wi-Fi or anything else. They wire it for it. You can select what onboard you want. You can select what broadcast you want. I way, way back, long, long time ago, back when I first started going to these things, bought one because I thought it was an investment. I figured I would use it every year. First year was great. And then F1 and the fan vision people couldn't agree on a contract for the next 7 years. So I ended up with a $350 brick that I awesome. Couldn't use or reprogram for any other purpose because it was only set up for F1. You can actually still find them at IndyCar events. So if you're yeah. going to an IndyCar yeah. event, I would recommend checking that out. They brought it.
NASCAR had something similar
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. NASCAR's had the same thing, and it works great. The thing is because it's on its own network, and that's why it's so hard to find, because you really have to invest. Like, I mean, you literally have to set up your towers all over the dang place. They brought it back, I think, for 1 year, and I think 2018 I rented one, and it was still pretty good. But after that, I haven't seen it. So if yeah. that would be something I would say for a venue as big as COTA. If you want to be able to follow live timing and scoring, that's a great solution. The F1 app, when it first came out, was also awesome. It was right on sync with the car would go by and your lap time would light up. This year, it was about 45 to 50 seconds behind if I could get it to work. And that was when I eventually had to go into my iPad to try to watch the qualifying to see where the sector times were. The car is coming past me on the main straight, and I'm seeing the green or purple sector time for sector two. That's how far behind it was. So that's something that, like, I think that's the bigger issue. If you're going to have that many people, you have to have the electronic infrastructure. Everybody's got devices. Everybody's got smartphones. Everybody's got iPads there. You have yeah. to have the infrastructure to support that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 2018 because I was in Montreal, and I want to say it was 2018, and I rented it there for the F1 race. And, yeah, it worked phenomenal. I mean, it was, like, crystal clear video. Pick whatever onboard you want, whatever, you know, onboard radio, video, race broadcast. I mean, a lot of the people were asking online, you know, like, what is the experience like being in person? And I agree, there's nothing like seeing an F1 car do what it does in person. TV does not, I mean, going back and watching the race a couple of times throughout the last week or so, the camera angle through the S's was a pretty cool camera angle, I thought, but it doesn't do justice in even the least, even the slightest bit mm-hmm. to see just how quickly an F1, and then when you see F4 earlier in the day, and you see W Series a little bit faster, and you see the Pirelli Hot Lives with the McLarens and the Aston Martins, you know, just flinging it through there left and right, locking up brakes and all, and then you see, you know, the lines they take and the speeds that they did, and then you see an F1 car go through there, and with the exception of Nikita Mazepin being as balanced as it was and flicking feet, you know, back and forth left and right, it's mind-blowing. But the race day experience was certainly dramatically hurt, in my opinion, because of the lack of electronic infrastructure and not being able to see it. I mean, at one point, I zoomed my camera, the front of my camera, all the way in on the TV that was across the way, and then I took a picture, and then I zoomed in the picture as far as I could, you know, and I could, you know, barely make out letters to kind of see who was who, but especially once there's lap cars and they get spread out, pit stop sequences, things like that, you miss so much of that. And I don't think Miami's going to have that problem because I'm fairly certain with all the Super Bowls and everything have, I imagine they have a phenomenal 5G experience with ultra-wide there. So probably everybody's going to have amazing quality. But yeah, COTA, there's got to be an investment from the cell companies that they're going to continue to have events there for 5G or in a Mac Day Wi-Fi, because the Wi-Fi, it worked okay in 2019, except for in the race. It was almost non-useful in the race, but during quality it worked. But throughout the weekend, I couldn't get Wi-Fi virtually at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone from, I would listen to the BBC commentary on the app because it was great, and I would just kind of hold my phone and not lock it because otherwise the commentary stops. So it would become the race of how long can my battery really last with the screen lit for an hour and a half. But now, even this year, I could not do that. Beyond Friday, I could not get anything on Saturday. I think free practice 3 was, I got about half of it and then it died. And then I didn't even bother trying to do it for qualifying because I knew I just wasn't even going to try. So yes, totally agree. If you're going to go and that's what they said when they took the fan vision out, was they said, well, we're going to supply you with this great app. And they did for a while. And now it's just slowly going down. especially at the track experience, and that's why I thought they brought it out.
Yeah, to be at like one of the best races of the season, and to, you know, have to use a stopwatch app to figure out the timing and scoring and what lap times and what the gap is between the two after each pit stop sequence, but then honestly not really knowing from like fifth on down, I really had no idea what was going on. We had no idea why Mazepin was a minute behind everybody after lap one. We saw none of the headrest issues. We knew none of this.
I don't think anybody saw that in yeah. slight defense.
That's true, yeah. He got a nice standing ovation by the sarcastic United
fans. Yes.
On many occasions as he was going by. But, yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. You spend that much money, and it is incredible to see an F1 car live. But I want that digital piece. I want that live timing and scoring that I
yeah.
get, you know, on every other race as well. You shouldn't have to lose that. That should be an added bonus on top of seeing F1 cars live.
No, absolutely. Totally agree. And, you know, the other thing that I would try to do, and this is just how I approach it in terms of knowing who's where, I literally count it early on and I go, that's P1. Who's chasing him? That's P2, P3. And if it's a lap car, I just go L1, L2, and I don't think about it. And then I pick up 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and down the line.
I think there's about half of my race footage of me filming is just me, like, talking to myself, trying to figure out who is who, like, mumbling, like, okay, this is one, this is two, like, going through all of them. And I was, like, trying to figure it out. But then by the time I get down to, like, 12 is like, here comes the leaders again. Oh, I lost it.
Like, yeah, I mean, by the end of the race, you had the battle, I think, for 6, 7, and 8, maybe about 10 seconds in front of the leaders. So, yeah. I mean, that's where, like, I would watch it, and then I would have to swish around, and I'd go, okay, here comes the battle for the lead, and here comes the battle I was paying attention to a minute ago, so.
I didn't realize they were battling for position then. I just knew that Max had a bunch of traffic coming up.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that there was that kind of added piece on top of that. I thought they were all kind of all over the place. I had no idea the three of them were even battling for anything.
Yeah, like the Schumacher stuff and all that, I didn't know about any of that until after the race. And it was actually good after the race. It was even hours after, you still couldn't get a signal.
Right.
I mean, we were miles
in the parking lot, sitting in the car, waiting to leave.
Oh, my God. On my bus, I don't think I told you guys the story. So my bus, there was almost mutiny. So we were on there for probably 2 hours, but it wasn't getting AC. The bus, it was a million degrees. And so all these people were yelling at our bus driver, like, turn on the AC, turn on the AC, turn on the AC. And then the guy was like, I can't, like, we have to get up to speed. And, like, there was just, like, yelling between the bus driver and all the passengers, and everybody's like, so upset, they're so hot and so exhausted, and like all yelling at each other. And then we finally got to the shuttle drop off. And then the guy that was sitting in the very front seat decided to tell the bus driver how bad he was at his job and hold up all of the rest of us. It was like, we're all sweating, we all want to die, let us off the bus. Anyway, yeah, it probably took about 2 hours to get out of there because traffic's so bad. So, anyway, that was my fun bus experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the next thing that we can talk about is.
Traffic management.
Yeah, I was going to read some of the – we had a lot of fan emails, and I appreciate you guys being the honesty of it. There was an overwhelming negative theme, and basically 99% of it was – I mean, the on-track action, people love COTA. They loved Austin. They love what they saw. They love seeing F1 cars. But everything, especially for a few people, especially the traffic situation and the shuttle situation – was quite damning for some of them. Some of them didn't, shuttles didn't come back for them. We were talking to some people that it was like they parked 3.5 miles away, and apparently they had paid like $200 for a shuttle for the weekend, and it just didn't come back for them. And there was hundreds of people sitting there waiting, you know, kids, elderly people, or, you know, you name it, that were 3.5 miles away from their parking. And I can tell you the roads, you know, when Andy says the farm road around there, he's not joking. I think there actually was a fatality in 2019. I think somebody hit walking down the side of the road. It's no joke there. I mean, at nighttime, it's pitch black.
It is a pitch black two-lane road that the sheriffs tried with cones to turn into a three-lane road going in one direction. So, you know, if you think of a two-lane road with shoulders, you can effectively get four lanes. And then they try to make it so that you can have three lanes going in, and then they flip it. Now, that's fine for race day. Saturday is another complete cluster when you do that, because you have sometimes as many people coming in for the concert as you have trying to leave. And so all of the thoroughfares, even on the Coda property itself, that are really only supposed to go one direction to handle all that flow, now are handling flow both ways. And so it just leads to this cluster and nothing moves. And on top of that, I know, because I've been there for every one of these dang things, they have changed traffic management companies at Circuit of the Americas at least three times. The really good one was around from like 14 to 18. And every year I knew where I would basically be parking. And every year I knew how to get in and out. And there were some years I could really get in and out really well. That was not the case this year. The first time I go to park with John, I go, they're not parking me where I thought they were going to park me. And they ended up parking us. I'm supposed to, now I'm not bragging about this, but I have lot A access. Okay. I pay up the, you know what, for it every year. It's supposed to be the easiest in and the easiest out. Easiest in, yes. They actually put us in the cart track this year for the first time. Never had been there before. It's not fine to get in, but it's cordoned off from the rest of the parking lot. So there's one way in and therefore one way out. And so when you have that, and now you're basically in this caged environment, there's nowhere to go. The only way we got out on Saturday was we basically made our own exit, drove around some of the roads that I think are only for media. So I apologize.
And actually the road that the drivers go out on. Yeah.
We ended up on like Coda. Like I could have turned around and gone into the paddock and really caused some stir if I really wanted to. But we ended up driving back out and somehow ended up back on one of the main thoroughfares to get out. There were actually, I heard this anecdotally, there were people who actually chartered helicopters who could not get from the main grandstand to the helicopter on Saturday, and they lost their helicopter ride because the guy had to fly out.
Oh, what?
So yes, it's a completely different experience sometimes, but it affected everybody. The bigger point here, that cluster affected everybody. So we made our own exit on Saturday. We then made our own exit again on Sunday when they finally decided to remove the cones, which were keeping us basically locked in. And then once that happened, we were able to kind of get out. And then we had to make our own exit. Some of people just gave up on the cones and ran them over. I don't suggest you do that, but, you know, to each their own. But the thing of it is those the parking lots have enough entrance and exits. I just don't understand why they don't use them. So that's something, you know, if you're paying attention, use the infrastructure that you do have, as limited as it is.
Yeah, someone sent a message this week to me on Twitter. I was going to pull it back up, but I think it was Regan Sandick that I believe he's an Austin local, and apparently there, according to what he was saying, there has been some kind of approval for some type of infrastructural improvement to head that way. Again, I think a lot of this is going to be contingent that they're going to continue to have massive events there. I mean, I know they've got NASCAR and World Endurance and things like that. So I think, and I believe they certainly will have Formula One for the long foreseeable future, especially.
Yeah, this crowd, they're going to get that contract done. Yeah. I have a no
doubt. I've heard that, and then he said that he believed there was some rumors of possibly expanding out their Metro Rail as well to potentially a stop, like out in the at least the direction of Austin, which I think would be a massive improvement to get people at least out of the city and then have some kind of pickup or something like that. But
yeah,
so at least it's being thought of, I guess. But the track's been there for 10 years, and
I've heard this before.
Yeah, you would have thought this was a first year event. So yeah, the hours that we spend in traffic, you know, Andy, bless his heart, is going to get an extra crown, you know, one day, because we had general admission tickets and therefore showed up an hour before the gates opened. Andy could have strolled in many, many hours.
Yeah.
And got out of his car and walked into his seat. But he
oh, no, it's
he, put us there basically before the sun was up. I'm not sure
what you did. I've never seen it in the dark. I'd only seen the shots of the teams going in. I'm like, well, okay, at least we'll get to see. I've never seen the Sunday support races because I've never usually gotten there that early or had to be there that early. But I was glad I was because Sunday was fun. And I was able to get the great shots of turn one of going, hey, the race is in 5 hours. This is the status of turn one right now.
Yeah, every once in a while I'd get a signal and I'd see the tweet come through with the new status update.
Oh my God.
That was our intention. We were like, surely we get there an hour beforehand. We'll clear, you know, surely we'll be able to get something in turn one, right? Nah. That was.
You had to be there maybe 5 a.m. Yeah. And that was probably pushing it.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say so. And based on the thousands of people that were wrapped behind the S's around turn one and then all the way down the hill.
Yep.
There had been literally tens of thousands of people that I didn't even know were there until after we'd gotten in.
And then we got cut by a bunch of people.
So do you guys...
cut by a bunch of people as well, yeah. There was... as soon as the gates opened, it all went to hell. So.
Yeah.
So do you guys remember around, what was it, about 8:15 when that sudden lurch forward and we all moved up and we didn't really know why?
Yeah.
Apparently what that was people breaking the gates down and just running. And then we saw the people running up the hill.
We saw people running.
So I guess that's why they were there so early.
Right.
Yeah.
So okay. They were running up the hill to try to get those seats. They had to reinforce the security gates. They had to call for backup basically and restop it. So that's why we lurched forward and then we stopped. And that's why the security gate procedure was also kind of really screwed up because it literally went from trying to check everything to put your hand up if you're in general admission and everybody raised the wristband and go through the security. So, I mean, thank God nothing bad happened and everybody was there for good intentions, but I mean, that actually makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, you know,
there's
zero invasion at a whole new level. Yeah, that's the security was. I don't want to talk too much about it just because I don't want anybody to get any bad ideas. But yeah,
right.
There's certainly some areas that need to be improved for sure.
Yeah,
for general safety and COTA is certainly COTA was much better than another track that I won't mention that I've been to, which was an absolute joke from a security standpoint. So, but yeah. So real fast, so I know we had a survey to talk about too, but advice for first-timers going in 2022, Deanna?
Bring a chair if you do general admission from the first day, and then don't do general admission.
Just don't bother. Spend the extra $10 to buy a damn seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spend all my money to get a seat in turn one and show up right as race starts.
It even went so far that Chris and I, and again, Andy's driving this whole time, but Chris and I actually went to Walmart, not only bought seats the night before, we bought stools to try to stand on for Deanna and I, because again, we're going to be challenged, thinking that maybe for turn one, we could get a shot where we just stand on top of the stools and be able to lift our heads above everybody else. We didn't need stools because we didn't need turn one. But yeah.
I still have never seen anything like that picture where you could see the turn or the main grandstand and then all the people standing in turn one and then all the people in the turn one grandstand. It was just
It looked like one continuous grandstand.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
That was mind-blowing. Andy, you have a different seating experience. Any thoughts for...
My advice for anybody who's thinking about going or however you want to plan this, And John and I got bit by this, some of it too. Have as much in your control as you can for your experience. Your experience is going to be that much better the more in control you are of where you're going and how you're getting there. If you do the buses can be super convenient, but they had 100 buses to quit on them, Saturday morning. So that's going to screw up the bus lines. There's really nothing I don't think the venue could have anticipated that was going to happen. You can yell at them for it, but I don't really know what you could do. Book everything as early as you can. I'm literally going to be booking my hotel for next year this week. John and I got literally kicked out of the hotel we wanted to stay in, and ended up having to then drive about 60 miles each time.
Pretty much to San Antonio.
Yeah, pretty much all the way to San Antonio, up and down I-35, which was also a nightmare. Driving in Texas, if you haven't done it before, I couldn't speak to Chicago traffic. I can't speak to New York traffic. Deanna might be able to do that. But Austin traffic and San Antonio traffic, they're crazy. They all drive 95 miles an hour in the slow lane, and they cut each other off like you wouldn't believe. So, and then they all screech to a halt when it gets jammed. So it's kind of crazy. It was some white knuckle driving. I earned my some super license points. That's what I want to apply for that.
Definitely.
Especially when we had to make our own exit on Saturday morning and end up somewhere in the Texas backcountry.
Thank God for Waze. Yeah. Yes. Thank God for... Yeah, some unmarked roads, I think. Chris was around us. Yeah.
And if you do a shuttle, the second qualifying or the race is over, just sprint. Sprint to the shuttle. And I haven't mentioned this yet, the pedestrian bridges. I think I spent the majority of my weekend either waiting in line or on those bridges. I've never seen anything like it because everybody had to go to get from one side of the track to the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Through these two bridges, and nobody apparently knows how to walk up and down stairs. So it just took so long, and like just to do go maybe like 200 feet, it felt like.
Yeah, it's bad that Inner Bridge actually has like a queuing system to like, yeah, you go in and then it routes you away from the bridge and then back to the bridge just to go on the bridge.
Yeah, was it worse than Nashville when we had to go over and under the bridges and all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A lot worse.
Okay.
The Nashville was messed up just because you didn't know where you were going. We went over back across the same bridge. I felt like multiple times.
You could still walk. You could still move. Like, I had to just, like, stand and wait to cross the bridge.
Shoulder to shoulder across the entire width of the bridge. And it didn't help us on each side of the bridge. For some reason, they were allowing people to actually stand on the bridge, on the steps of the bridge for the entire sessions, including the race itself as well. That's another lane of traffic, of people traffic that's now blocked. Because you got people that have they're just like, hey, I'm going to watch the race from here. And nobody moved them or anything else. So, yeah, it was an experience.
Yeah. But that you brought up Nashville. I'm curious to know, at least for me, I will have to say, I love COTA. Well, F1 fan first. I think my favorite event that we attended this year was Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville was awesome. I think it was the first time I've been there, but you know, it's the city itself was pretty badass, and it was a different vibe, different experience, and the racing was cool as hell. Like where we sat, you know, coming across the bridge, we saw so many overtakes. Colton Herta just doing unfeasible things, you know, and until the very last minute there, but. Yeah, I mean, it was incredible, that experience as well. I'll definitely be back to Nashville, without a doubt. I'll be going to Dakota as well. But,
but like, I thought that was a lot of people, but it was absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
I don't know what the attendance numbers were for Nashville. But
well, I thought I heard over 100 for the weekend. Okay. I don't know what their capacity was.
Was like 50.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't think you could not fit a Coda crowd in that infrastructure.
No, there's no way. But it like felt really busy and nice and fun, but then I could also walk to my hotel, which was nice.
Yeah, so like once you got out of the track, it just spread out and you could do whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, you could hop into a restaurant or whatever. Yeah, it was a very different experience. And anyway, here's 3 hours of my life that I'm going to go sit in a car somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as an event, I was more curious about now. I mean, for me, this COTA experience was like renewal of what I already kind of knew, except with more people. So, I mean, I've done it, so there wasn't anything really new about it for me. The Nashville thing was all brand new. We'd never seen anything like that before with IndyCars racing over a veterans bridge over a river. So that was just the uniqueness of it was a ton of fun. So many new fans that we got a chance to meet. Was also super fun too. And I just think that entire weekend, just we hadn't really met up in person before. So all of that together, I think kind of made that my weekend of the year. Dakota, a close second. St. Louis, a close third. I mean, they're all right up there because, I mean, you were on the inside in the pit lane. But I mean, from a vantage point of actually watching the race, I would have rather had been in the grandstand. But to have that access and to be inside of the inside was so awesome. So, I mean, I think they're three great trips, but probably Nashville, COTA, and then St. Louis for me.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I agree.
All right. So on that note, we are going to take a break. We're going to then talk about the Global Motorsports Survey. And so come on back and we'll dive into what all the fans had to say about the F1 and that experience. So come on back.
Attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like they're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, 20% off, free shipping. Let's get back to it.
All right, welcome back to Season 3, Episode 47 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast. It's our COTA experience and this Global Motorsports Survey episode. John, you've probably had more experience at getting into this and diving into it. I think it came out actually while we were in the car.
Yeah.
I was driving and you were telling me about this survey. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I was trying to read through these 60 pages of data on my phone while we were in the car and stop
and
go.
Plenty of time.
Traffic. I'm surprised I didn't like throw up just from from the traffic and looking at small print, but yeah, so we had the Global Motorsport Survey. It's happened. It's been a few times, but I know it happened in 2015, 2017, and now again in 2021. So it's been interesting to see kind of how the numbers have changed across the last few years. But this year was actually their largest turnout ever, which the number is actually not as large as I thought it would be when I first saw it. It's only 167,000 respondents across the world, but it is their largest ever. And I do think it gives F1 a good sample size from kind of overall. There were respondents from 187 different countries, people that speak 15 different languages. 57% of them were from Europe, which was actually down from 63% in 2017. Asia, Pacific, Middle East, and Africa doubled from the last survey, so they're now up to 21%. And then the U.S. made up an additional 21%, or the Americas, I should say, made up an additional 21% as well. So it's kind of interesting to see the split out there. Obviously, the UK is still, and Europe as a whole is still reigning, supreme when it comes to overall viewership and fanship, but kind of interesting to see how the other continents are starting to progress there. This was the youngest survey ever, so 34% of the respondents were under the age of 24, and 63% were under the age of 30. 34% were under 24, and 63% were under 34. So you've got, that's... basically, almost the entire population of respondents were in that age group there. And it was also was their highest female participation at 18.3%. So I thought that was pretty interesting. They had a lot of new fans. So 34% of the respondents said they've been following F1 for under 5 years. So a lot of people just in the last few years, probably in the Drive to Survive era, I would imagine, would be the biggest thing there. And then the survey itself made up 21.8 million different individual data points. So there was a ton of stuff for F1 to look at there. And you guys, if you got any thoughts, feel free to hop in anytime. But over half of the respondents said that F1 was the motorsport that they followed most avidly, followed closely, well, not closely, but followed in second by World Endurance Championship and MotoGP. The fastest growing, and I think we just talked about Nashville, the fastest growing support across the across the world is IndyCar, which is now at 28%, which was a pretty significant increase over the last survey. So,
that tells me they're doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the biggest one being Grosjean, but I think you do see a lot of F1 talent kind of moving that direction and now kind of F2. But I think it's this kind of want desire, especially as F1's gained popularity, to kind of look for another. I don't know what drag race is happening outside my apartment right now.
The Hoboken Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Sounds like you got to make some drag racing and like the New York 500 going on.
Yeah, I don't know what in the world is happening. Okay, where was I? Oh, I was just okay. So I feel like as F1 has gained popularity this last year, I think people are just also looking for another open wheel series, and IndyCar fills that spot. And it's a lot more competitive a lot of the time. So they really put on a great show out there, and apparently out on my street too as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, you started to have the Alonso effect a couple of years there with the 500. I think that started just kicking it all. And then, yeah, now you've got, you know, former F1 drivers that are full-timing it. Obviously, Grosjean, you know, signing a big deal for a longer-term deal going on there. So I think it's certainly, to your point, Deanna, it's another thing. It's like, all right, F1's off, especially in the States. Now I've got, you know, 4 hours later, oh, there's an Indy race. Like, heck, yeah, I'm put on some other open wheel racing. It's just the popularity has grown tremendously in F1 racing, especially in the United States. So the top attributes used by fans were exciting, technological, expensive. I agree with you on that one. Competitive and entertaining. Interesting enough, the word overtake actually dropped 10% from the prior survey in 2017. So,
I mean, that used to be the thing was, my God, give us some overtaking. Yeah. And then that's when they gave us DRS.
Right. So that's, for whatever reason, good, bad, and different, the word that people use to describe F1, word overtake, is being used 10% less of the time, according to the survey.
I feel like part of that is, like, the promise of the 22 regulations. Like, oh, that's supposed to give us more overtaking, so that just infers that we don't have it now, which is not wrong, but I think that's probably explains just from 2017 to now would be part of my explanation on that one.
Yeah, I agree with you on there. But, hey, you know, we've between Vettel and Alonso, we've got 402 overtakes between the two of them, right? Something like that. So,
yeah,
I still got to figure out how they come up with that.
Well, they like posted something, and I tweeted about it. It said like fortune favors the brave, because it's like Vettel versus Alonso done this many overtakes. But I was like, fortune favors the car that is better in race term than it is in qualifying. Like, that's just, they're just not qualifying where they should be technically, or the car's just better in the race than it is in qualifying. So that's just meh.
All right,
whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of a mean
point. I've never liked the idea of this, but whatever.
Moving on to the calendar, there's a lot of interesting points here. 3/4 of the respondents live in a country where there is a GP. However, fewer than 20% have attended a race in the last 5 years. So I think certainly COVID has had an impact of that for sure. And then less than 13% have attended a non-home GP since 2016. It's surprising enough, after the crowds we saw in COTA and the sellout now in Miami, the USA fans are apparently the least likely to attend their home GP, however, they did note that they believe that cancellations in 2020 were certainly attributed to probably some of that coming out in the survey.
Yeah.
So fans over 45 years old are twice as likely to travel international for a GP because it's so damn expensive. That makes total sense to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're the ones who can afford it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's probably why, especially in the U.S., you have all these younger fans coming in from Drive to Survive and they can't afford a ticket. So I guess it makes sense there. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, even see COTA, I mean, $300 for general admission ticket, that's still very expensive to a lot of especially younger fans. So I think that kind of makes sense on that U.S. Grand Prix number. I mean, also with COVID, but I think I would imagine the U.S. is a pretty young demographic with Drive to Survive.
It'll be very interesting to see if they do the survey again in 2 years or something.
Yeah,
like
to
that.
See where this see
yeah.
where the sense
changes up. In the U.S.
Yeah.
Sure. And then fans are now willing to pay 20% more than they were in 2017 for a 3-day pass. So I think the average...
And that's what we just saw what happened with the Miami ticket prices.
But like...
That's
how many options
correct.
Are there outside of a 3-day pass? Oh,
I mean, you could get some 1-day passes. I know at COTA this weekend or for this last weekend because they opened them up. But usually it's the 3-day pass. Yeah.
But back in 2017, were there more options that were different? Do you remember?
I don't recall. Okay. I don't recall anything other than the 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you could get like a single day race day. I mean, I take that back. I think in Monza when I went in 2017, I think you could buy like a Saturday ticket if you want to go in there, you know, take your kid and just get in there and see some cars run around for a few hours, see some sport races. But yeah, I think predominantly most people go for the 3-day.
Yeah.
And I think the pricing makes sense. It's like, oh, for just a little bit more, I could get 3 days versus one. So I think the venues clearly want to push you towards that direction as well, based on their pricing strategy. Continuing on in the calendar, there's 16 core events that fans absolutely want to see, but there's 4 of them that are considered untouchable, as in they should never, ever leave the F1 calendar. And I think one of these is definitely interesting to me. The 4 of these is Monza, no surprise, Spa, Silverstone, and then Monaco. Yes, Monaco. Even though it's the youngest survey they've ever had, most people were in their 20s, only been watching F1 for a few years, Monaco is still an untouchable.
I mean,
I thought that was interesting.
I think with the younger fans, it's great to see that. I mean, it's all the historic tracks, and they kind of make sense. But Monaco, I've known that the Monaco Grand Prix was a thing for as long as I can remember. It's just so synonymous with the sport. And if you know one thing about it, you know that the Monaco Grand Prix exists. And it's one of those kind of things where you see it in movies and TVs and all that stuff, and it just keeps recurring. So I think it's just so, like, such a part of F1 that it literally is untouchable.
Well, and it gets profiled in how many different video games across how many different platforms.
Yeah.
I mean, your Forzas do it. I remember there was a Need for Speed game a long time ago when I actually used to play video games that had different variations of the Monaco circuit that you could play at all different times. And they would, like, cordoned off part of it. And then, you're doing this third or that third of it, and then other stuff. But
doing the Formula E circuit.
Yeah, kind of sort. Yeah, exactly. And you were literally kind of racing around it. They didn't call it Monaco, but you knew what it was. But yeah, I mean, as a race itself, it's not the best race. We all know that.
Yeah.
As an event, it's still a thing. And I think that's what this tells us, is whether or not we like the race itself. Maybe your race is decided on that Saturday and that's just how we go, but people want to still see that glitz and glam. That's still a thing. That's still important to the sport.
Yeah, and most of the people that know what it is, that can recognize it, don't actually care, I think, probably about the racing product. It's all the kind of diehard people that understand that that's not the greatest race. That's not the one that necessarily we want to go to, but that is the kind of high status, high ticket event. And, like, it always has been.
It's the crown jewel, you know.
It's the
Daytona 500. It's the Indy 500. It's Le Mans. You know, it's the crown jewel of the sport. So, yeah, I agree with you guys. That's a good point.
And as long as it's back on its proper weekend, you know, when it should be on Memorial Day weekend, where you can have that, then the Indy 500, then, if you still are so inclined, the Coca-Cola 600, and have 18 hours of motorsport in your life, then, hey, do it.
Yeah, good point. Fans races that fans want to see continue, like, annually, you know, year in and year out, Australia, Brazil, Canada, Japan, and yes, the United States of America made the list there as one that fans definitely want to see continuing to happen every year. Newer favorites that even though these really aren't new anymore, but I guess in comparison to 2017, Azerbaijan was a favorite. Abu Dhabi was really surprising me.
That surprises me too.
Yeah, maybe the event itself, perhaps, just the night race.
Maybe it's a similar reason why Australia is so high. Like, that's the season opener. Like, I like Australia. I don't think it's my necessarily favorite track, but it's kind of the season opener big event that it is.
Yeah, I mean, as an atmosphere, Australia is great. Yeah. As a race, I mean, it's the most anticipated free practice I ever get up for is that practice, because I want to see really where our order is.
Let's do this.
But yeah, exactly. And then you get into the race and you're like, well, there's like four overtakes if you're lucky.
But Abu Dhabi hasn't been halfway interesting since 2016.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why it's there. But I will say, I'm going to take this moment to kind of don't always trust these surveys, because while we're talking about the calendar, one of the questions here was, how many races would you like to see on the calendar? The options they gave were 4 races, 5 to 12 races, or 13 plus races. That does not allow you the nuance that everybody wants. Everybody enjoyed and loved the 17 race 2020. And you're giving them the option to differentiate between any of that. It's just, okay.
We like 13 plus races. Yeah. So let's do 25.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Literally last night I had this conversation, and I was like, growing up, it was like 15 to 16-ish races every 3 weeks. And it was something special because you had to wait 3 weeks for the next freaking race. And you were just dying itching for it. And now we've got, like, next year we've got like 4 triple headers, basically. It's going to be brutal for an F1 and certainly for a podcast. We're going to get the third lessons out now. But yeah, I don't know if it may just be more of just, it's a year end. We always see the donuts out there at the end of the year. We're crowning champion. The night race is a beautiful track. It's a stunning track.
I mean, they literally created it out of nothing. They literally built it, made an island out of nothing because they could. It need some help? Yes, but it's still, it's a hell of a thing.
I have high hopes for the reprofiling, But right now, Abu Dhabi, even with Azerbaijan and Singapore, not even close.
And Singapore was the last one. And that's, I've told you before, Singapore is number one on my bucket list. I pray to God I can get there before they end that contract. You know, it's just, yeah, that's always been up there. That's an incredible city, incredible venue, and just the sound and everything else reverberating across the city. It's just a beautiful thing. So, and then, and ones that, you know, returnees, I guess you should say, which somebody surprised me as well, Germany, France, Austria, Netherlands, that one, and Germany don't surprise me at all. France, I'm a little surprised by, but, you know, I guess.
Well, I wonder if that's not the track that we get, but the track that they want in, what's it called?
Dijon?
Not Paul Ricard, but the other one,
Magny-Cours, yeah.
And again, I don't know. I mean, I probably could have dug in even more to see how many of the French respondents there were, but yeah, that one surprised me a little bit. The next two were Mexico and Hungary.
One quick thing. You know, Germany, I know there's a lot of fans that love those German tracks. That's always been kind of, especially lately, it's been really an F1 quagmire why they can't seem to make those venues in F1 work together. Because when they have them, they're very popular. But yet we've seen, even in the last maybe 5 years, some really empty grandstands in Germany. Now, obviously, the last time we were there was COVID, and they had to have empty grandstands. But it would have been interesting to see how they would have filled up Nürburgring last time they were there. I'd love to see – Germany has some deep car history. I love it. But it's just been this F1 quagmire for a long time.
And you would think now, well, I mean, now we have Schumacher, Vettel still there. I don't know. I would love to see Hockenheim come back personally, but
yeah,
we'll see.
This one I think was really, really interesting. China and Russia both scored very, very poorly amongst F1 fans. Both of them actually scored less than the Miami GP, which obviously has yet to even house a race yet. So, fans aren't in love. I think China is a decent track. I mean, I'm not. It's not something that I'm like, oh, we got to go to China because it could fall off the calendar and I wouldn't lose any sleep about it. But I feel like it is a decent track. Russia, obviously, you know, in Sochi has never been great. We don't know what the new track is exactly going to play out. Fans just don't care about either one of those venues. Yeah. So that was pretty evident there.
I mean, Russia surprised me. I was just surprised that it wasn't, or China scored that low. Because like you said, it is a track that has some characteristics, has some uniqueness to it.
Yeah. I like the first little twisty bit.
Yeah, that turn, the second one. Yeah. Sector one is very unique in nature. So.
But it's one not of the few anything. With the...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not anything great. It's got a huge straightaway. So, I mean, it is, it's almost interesting that you see tracks that Mercedes has dominated at, and I think Mercedes has had the run of China. They've definitely had the run of Russia. We know that. That I wonder if that maybe plays into it a little bit.
Certainly, because that moves into the next thing there is the popularity contest. So for the first time, Max Verstappen takes the most popular driver. They talked about it pretty heavily at COTA while we were there amongst the fans in 2021, followed by Lando Norris at 13% and Lewis Hamilton at 12%. So they're very, very tight, 14, 13, and 12. Daniel Ricciardo was next at 10%, and Sebastian Vettel was at 8%. Max was number one in the United States, Japan, and Netherlands. Lewis, naturally, number one in the UK, Canada, and Brazil, of all places, which I thought was surprising. Just after
Senna. That's the Senna.
Well, that's true, yeah. But I thought after 2008, I know, you know.
Well, no, when he's not racing up against a Brazilian sun, I think they like him.
Yeah,
and I think
that's true.
I think he earned a ton of respect for going through that. I think that's probably why he scores so high.
Very true. Let's see. Lando, most popular among female fans and fans between the ages of 16 and 24. I don't think there's any shock there. Also, probably not a shock as all of us are getting older. Hamilton, strongest among fans that are 45 and up. I'm not quite that old yet, but. I can definitely see the old timers being more into Hamilton. Charles, George, Russell, and Pierre Gasly also scored well amongst our fans. Unsurprisingly, Mazepin scored even lower than the no favorite selection. I think that he had you couldn't even barely register a line for a Mazepin score there, so he scored that lowly. From a team perspective, McLaren is the most popular team now with nearly 30% of the votes, followed by Red Bull and Ferrari. This is the first time since they started doing this survey that Ferrari was not number one in the survey. So it's really interesting to see the shift in from the old school fans to new school and everything that goes with that.
I mean,
2019, they did damage.
Yeah,
you had all these new fans coming in, and then first thing they get introduced to is the cheating stuff. So
it's a lot of black eyes. Yeah.
Well, proof that marketing and social media and active social media pay off, because Ferrari is one of the least active on social media because they always never thought they ever had to do it. McLaren has been everywhere on social media. You can't go without seeing them sometimes. I mean, I even see commercials on other sports about McLaren and Cisco phones. So,
yeah, and obviously Red Bull, you know, an iconic brand. World round, doing crazy stuff and stunts and jumping out of balloons in space. And, you know, it's a cool brand, you know, whether you like them or not. You got to admit they do well on marketing, to say the least. 50% of female fans rank McLaren number one due largely to their popular driver lineup. Both guys that, you know, they do well on social media and they interact well with fans and, you know, they do everything right. So that's not surprising. And then Haas of all teams, of course, was pulling at the rear by a long shot there.
I would have wondered where they would have. I just would have wondered where Haas would have scored without this current lineup, but with the lineup before.
Yeah,
it would be interesting.
The current livery. I mean, just to see, there were literally next to no Haas fans at an American race.
Yeah, Chris and I logged. We stopped counting. We got to seven amongst the 3 days. We counted seven people, individual people wearing Haas gear. Seven out of the 400,000 in attendance. And we found one booth that had a Haas hat for sale, and it was like a 2020, 2019 hat. And was shoved in the corner. I just happened to see it. It was literally like buried, you know, under some other F1 generic gear. They weren't even selling Haas. You could buy it if you wanted to. So that just kind of shows you that there's just no investment in from a social media standpoint or anything. And then last on the social media and kind of popularity contest, the drivers that do the most in social media, like you were saying, Andy, are the ones that score the best. Max, Lando, Lewis. Obviously do a lot of social media. So the other thing is, let me see if I can find this here real fast. Oh, so in 2017, Lewis had 22% of the vote. Kimi in 2015 was the most popular, 14% of the vote, and then against Max at 14% of the vote. So it's interesting to see, while Lewis is still pretty even, he's come down a little bit, but he's pretty much level with where other drivers were in 2017. While Max is still popular, it's really interesting to see how so many other drivers now are also popular. You know, before it was, you know, you had just a few drivers that really, the Kimmys, the Hamiltons really stuck out in the last few surveys. Now it's like there's so many fans that love so many drivers. And then we see that we like most of the great, with the exception of Mazepin, you know, there's very few drivers that I couldn't cheer for. You know? So.
I mean, they've made a concerted effort amongst, I'd say, even in the last maybe 3 years of coverage that I've seen, like in the build up to some of these events, to get the drivers outside of their comfort zone. You know, they put them in like the car. They do the hot laps with like Martin Brundle asking them rapid fire questions going at 200 miles an hour, or, you know, Kimi Räikkönen doing a lawnmower race, or, you know, all sorts of different stuff. I mean, you see the one of the more popular ones I know is the Lando and Carlos Sainz doing the milk spill thing in the car and you know, basically ruining the inside of a really expensive car. But, you know, it's all of those types of things is kind of, you know, before, other than the required questions from the media, these drivers wouldn't talk. They wouldn't say hardly anything. I mean, Kimi's popular because he doesn't. But with that exception, I think they've done a good job of getting these people to be likable and knowable amongst the fan base. And I think that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, and Deanna, you pointed on that in the NASCAR Weekly podcast, is just how engaged the drivers are and the teams are in comparison. There's certainly a few guys in NASCAR that do well on social media, but I mean, it's just a light and day difference. It's just every single day you can go out there. And one of the questions here, I don't have the exact number, I have to go find it, but I think it was like 35% of all the respondents said that they engage in some form of F1 media, whether it be podcasts, YouTube, social media, or whatever, even on non-race weekends, which was a massive increase, obviously, as technology and apps change, of course. But And I would love to see how that would compare to other major forms of motorsports. If it's a non-race week or off season, I mean, how many times do I still check F1 Twitter during the off season? It's every day. And I'm sure you just don't see that in other forms of racing, at least mostly so. And lastly, sporting regulations was a heavy talking point on this one, and I thought there was some interesting things here. Two-thirds of all the respondents said that they are fully aware that F1, that their primary push is for sustainable fuels by the mid-2020s, and they also identify that sustainable fuels should be F1's number one priority. So a lot of fans are aware of the new technology. They know that F1 is a leader, and they've been a leader for decades now. Anything that's in your road car today, most likely started in an F1 car, and they know that F1 has a big push for sustainable fuels, and they want to see that continue. When it comes to climate change and things like that, it's obviously very important, especially with the younger generation. Let's see. And that one actually was the outscored all other sporting considerations, was that sustainable fuels for the mid-20s.
Well, and that makes sense because, I mean, who wants to be the one that's touting, I'm the fan of the sport that's polluting our air and making things worse. You know, yeah. When you've got, there's a climate change summit going on in Europe right now. So, I mean, that makes sense. And everybody wants this to be right. And we're trusting that some of the smartest people in the world that are going to be able to solve this and do it in a way that makes us proud of the sport. I think they're on the right track of doing it. They're not there yet.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that if we have sustainable fuels.
Yeah, go ahead, Deanna.
That don't produce any pollutants, then surely we have no excuse not just to go back to the V8s at 20,000 RPMs. I mean, they're not producing any pollutants.
Yeah.
I'd say let's let them scream again. But
you got my vote on that one.
Yeah, I think most fans would be on board for that one. Fan support, less steward involvement, which I think is no surprise, except for in situations of dangerous driving. It's the only times that they really want stewards to be involved in the racing. As in previous surveys, fans that are over 35 years old continue to. There's a huge push in that population for tire wars to bring that back to multiple tire manufacturers and refueling. Apparently, every single year, refueling is still popular. Again, I don't think it's ever going to happen again, but there is a massive push. It's heavily in.
They're never going to do it with the cost cap.
Yeah,
they cannot do it with the cost cap. It costs too much money. Just those rigs.
Not
that they had to set up.
Extremely dangerous.
You're never going to do it.
Moving on to sprint races. Sprint races were seen as marginally improving the show, but it was very predominantly clear that fans do not want them across every race.
Yeah.
Can we laminate that, please?
Yeah. I would also like to, because you just pointed out those other things, refueling, tire wars, and having a third driver were all more popular than sprint races. So do with that what you will.
Yeah, that's the next one. The fans predominantly are against artificial manufacturing or manipulation of races. No reverse grids, no success ballast that we've seen in other forms of racing. And they don't want technical freezes. They want to see teams pushing the envelope and not be penalized like they did with the DOS system, like F1 did with the pit stops with Red Bull. If a team perfects it and they're phenomenal at it, don't punish them. It just means the other teams need to step up and do better.
Exactly.
You mentioned third drivers. That was third drivers and the ability to buy and run customer teams, just like straight out of the box, be a full-fledged customer. Here, it'll be buy all my parts was big for the fans, even though probably something that's not going to happen. So there was some other stuff with gaming and some other things, that we could get into. But for the sake of time, I thought those were the big ones there. It was really interesting to see just a shift from years prior. And, as the data guy in me, I'm already itching to see what it'll look like in 2022 or 2023 when we see this again, just to see how the shift is and how this younger generation has really changed the landscape, really, of the sport that we love. So,
yeah, I mean, when it comes to the, I said laminate that thing with the sprint races, and I'm reading, some of these rumor websites that say, they would eventually want the sprint to be the preferred format. No, please listen to the voice. It's not just the old curmudgeons that don't like it. And there's more engagement because people are trying to speak out against it. It's okay for some, but not for all. Please don't overdo it.
Yeah.
Remember my French silk pie theory. Just remember that.
I feel like the sprint races, I don't know why there's just so much scapegoating into saying all of these younger fans want them when that's clearly not the case. I think that they just kind of want the money from having an additional big event at a weekend and all the sponsorship dollars and people that come with that, which is fine. Just, you know, say that and don't blame this entire demographic of fans. It's like, what? Like, yeah, this isn't what we exactly asked for or want. So, yeah, it's just...
Yeah, the very first bullet point is that this is the youngest, you know, group of people that have ever filled the survey. And at the end here, we're wrapping up saying those people do not want sprint races. So,
yeah
F1, you're going to have to start rewriting your narrative in a different way.
They were talking about how there's like 20 million data points. Not all data points are created equal.
Yeah, that's totally true.
And Danny, you were talking about on the NASCAR Weekly podcast about like what makes why F1 is suddenly so popular in the U.S., you know, with younger fans and things like that. And you had all kinds of good ones. Definitely go check that out. I want to guides or whatever word I'm looking for there of what Deanna said. But, another one that popped up to me is the races are short. You know, it's 90 minutes in and out. Like,
it's just not long at all.
I can't imagine doing what I did when I was younger and watching a 4 or 5 hour NASCAR race. I mean, with my life now, with family and things like that, there's no way in hell that I would ever be able to do that. But I can find an excuse to pull 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't have to, you know, jump into doing an agenda and getting ready to do a show that same night, you know, I could have my F1 in the morning, take a nap, and be ready to do whatever I want to do with the rest of my Sunday.
Yeah, and I...
You know, there's not a lot of other sports that let you do that. The NFL certainly doesn't even let you do that.
Yeah, and I would much rather take a longer race, like the full race with strategy and pit stops and all that mess, than just 30 minutes of everybody just kind of running around in the same general order.
Right.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot there that, we've seen several NASCAR drivers have spoken out over the last couple of weeks about, hey, NASCAR, we got to wake up here. F1's doing something good. Let's start looking into it. And yeah, as someone who grew up diehard in NASCAR and been watching it my entire life and living in Charlotte and everything else, working for racing way back in the day, it's the amount of races, which unfortunately, F1 is trending in the wrong direction here. Let's hopefully we wake up to that one. But the length of races, is just massive, I think.
Yeah.
To keep people locked in and engaged.
Yeah. So. Well, and one thing I mentioned about like NASCAR versus F1 is NASCAR is inherently pretty confusing what they have now with adding all the stages and the playoffs and all that stuff, which I'm not necessarily against the playoffs themselves. I think they've had some exciting stuff in the past few weeks here, but I think F1 is such an easy, they've made a very welcome space for new fans where it's very clear and easy to understand what's going on. Whereas I think some of these other motorsports can get pretty complex pretty quickly and you need to have a certain like aptitude or like want to learn about it for it to fully make sense. Whereas I don't think F1 has quite as high of a barrier to entry as the other ones do.
And take it a step further, and you're seeing that in the growth of IndyCar.
Yeah.
Because that's even simpler. I mean, F1 has its own complexities, and it's part of the reason we love it. But you take that even a step further, and you have IndyCar, where it's guy go fast, wins the race.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
There's no MGUH and MGUK, and, you know, so from a technological standpoint, I agree with you. I mean, we see fans on the F1 side saying they don't want artificial manipulation of results. And I still, to this day, I think NASCAR playoffs is 100% that. When you've got a guy like Kyle Larson, who's dominated the season and barely escaping through a stage, a round of playoffs just because he has a bad night, it shouldn't be like that. And I've always been a fan of a guy that's consistent wins championships. The playoff system, the point system that they use, you win, you're in, but then you get stage points, and the stage points go to the playoffs, and then it's a lot going on there. And I don't think that, they're trying to get the four quarters effect to compete with NASCAR or to compete with the NFL. I just don't think it's done well. And even in 2019, we were there, Chris and I were talking about this just the other day. NASCAR was in Texas that weekend in 2019.
Yep.
And we 100% would have drove down to Dallas-Fort Worth and seen the race, but they did it on Sunday. And they competed with F1, which they lost. But, like, why, you know, well, from a attendance standpoint, why not do it on Saturday night? I would have been there 100%.
I can give you a two-word explanation for that one. One of my least favorite guys in all of motorsports, Eddie Gossage. Guy's an idiot.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Yeah, 100%. But I'm like, we totally would have gone down there and made it a full race weekend, but it's just not thoughtful planning. Use F1 to your advantage, especially in the U.S., and correlate that. So we've seen them partner up with IndyCar since 2019. I think that's been a semi-successful platform, just kind of teaming up on weekends and things. But, it'll be interesting to see. I'd love to see a NASCAR do something similar to this and kind of see what the data out there is. And I'd love, as someone, again, who's watched this work for 3 decades, to fill out my own NASCAR survey as well. So, any final thoughts?
I mean, I think it shows that you've got an audience that's getting more dynamic. They're definitely more on more devices. They're younger. They're more trendy. They care about the environment and they respect some of the history that's in this sport. So the kids are all right, I think, is the main theme I take away from this is, yeah, I mean, even from younger drivers to younger fans, this sport's only going to go up the more engagement that it gets. And it looks like they're going in the right direction. Overall.
I agree with you. For me as well, like coming out of it, I think it's awesome. In addition to the young things, I think it's phenomenal to see the female engagement. We've seen W Series, we've seen the women in motorsports, we've seen content creators like Deanna have been massively into it. Compared to when I was a kid, you didn't see that, or at least it wasn't well known if there was any out there. You know, the bullshit that I see on Twitter about, you know, the girls are watching the sport because the way the driver looks or something like that, that's garbage.
Not anymore. If that ever was a thing, that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, I challenge anyone who has that ignorant attitude to go ask a female content creator about F1, and Deanna will school you all day, every day, and give you 4 years of history to go with it. So I think that it's crazy, but it's awesome to see just, you know, the female engagement there, and that they've tacked in and they're nerding out like we've been nerding out for years now. It's just cool as hell to see the popularity go across, you know, all races and all genders and everything else in between. So I think that was kind of a big takeaway for me.
Yep. It's just amazing. I think just in general, especially the younger demographic, it's not something motorsports as a whole. If you would have asked me about 5 years ago, is it a thing that I thought would be A, this popular, or B, just like looking like it had a future to survive? I kind of felt like a few years ago it was on a downward trend, or that would have been my guess. So to see what Liberty's been able to do and kind of turn the ship around and how that's spread out to other series as well, I think we're in a really good, great spot. And at the moment, it seems like it's only up from here.
Yeah. So just one last quick way to kind of bring this all together with everything we've been talking about. In 2014, I was at COTA. There was talk of the race possibly not happening. Three or more teams were about to go bankrupt. I think we had a grid of 18 cars, and the sport looked like it was in real, real trouble. Compare that now to 2021, 140,000 through the turnstiles every day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This survey being more engaged than it ever has been, and viewership numbers going up through the roof. So, I mean, it's that quick that it can swing this way. And what this tells me is they better listen to this, because it could happen that quickly and back in the other direction if they screw it up.
Yeah, we've seen it happen in NASCAR. So hopefully it doesn't happen to our F1, but anyways.
All right.
Take it away, right, Everybody.
Yep. So we will probably be back on Wednesday night with our Mexican Grand Prix race preview for John and Deanna. It's been Andy. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast. Or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.